All right. Well, we're really excited to start up here talking to secular colleagues about faith. And Emily Ruppel here. I love to read material from the God and Nature magazine, so very excited to have her here. And if you haven't checked that out, be sure to check that out online. So just turn it over to Emily. Make sure you find a seat. And if there's no room, sit on the floor, you know, whatever.
I'm just the moderator today, but we will be moderating with an iron fist at a time, because everybody needs a nap before dinner.
And dinner's early tonight, right? It's at 5:30?
Is it?
Yeah. Dinner is early, so.
All right, so even more to look forward to.
Volleyball.
This is an important topic at a meeting like this, and I'm really glad that InterVarsity has put this panel together with all of you fine folks who I'm sure will have really important things to say. About that moment in an academic setting where you realize somebody has started dialing back your IQ, because instead of going along with the joke about how annoying Christians are, or how they're wrong about everything, or how all Christians are anti-evolutionists, yada, yada, yada. You either didn't laugh at the joke, or maybe you moved towards the tension and said something back and tried to correct the broadly painted picture of what Christianity means or could be. So with that being said, I'd love to turn it over to our panelists today, and they're all going to speak for 5 minutes, I think, about, and then we'll have time for questions.
Great. So I guess we can introduce ourselves as we go. I'm Dave Vosburgh. I'm an organic chemist at Harvey Mudd College. I've been there for 11 years, and my wife is a campus minister, actually, with InterVarsity, which does give me some easy openings to conversations with colleagues. If they want to know or find out what my wife does, and that sort of implies things about me, and it kind of starts some conversations, it could end others. But that is an avenue. Also, I have two adopted kids. Our oldest is not, but our youngest two are foster adopted, and that starts conversations about why would you do that? You could have a biological kid, right? And so that opens faith conversations as well, I've found, with colleagues. And I don't have any colleagues that are anti-adoption, it turns out. And so that's been really great. I would say, generally speaking, though, I think surprising colleagues, so if you kind of just fit into an easy little box of, oh, I think that's what a Christian is, then they won't be as interested, probably. Not that you need to be, like, weirdly deviant in some strange way. But if you're surprising in some way and sort of upset some of their expectations and you pique their interest, I think that's really helpful. Like what Justin Barrett was talking about, you know, you want things that are like, you know, they're a little unexpected, but not like totally strange. Right? So you kind of want to sort of fit in that, and that place will be different for different people. So I don't think the approach that I have is the same for my faculty colleagues as for my students necessarily, as for other folks I meet, for example. So there might be different strategies for different people, both in the receiving end and the giving end, right? So we're three different people too, and so we have probably different strategies that have worked. One thing that we did, like when we had our two foster kids that were individually adopted, we had adoption parties for them at our house. And I invited both Christian and secular colleagues and friends, and we had this big party celebrating their adoption, you know, like it was a birthday party, but it was kind of bigger because it was a one-time thing. You just adopted once, normally, and you have more than one birthday, hopefully. And so we also had some friends pray for the kids, which seemed very appropriate given the gravity of being adopted. Right, and so it kind of opened their eyes to some of our world. It was in our home, and you know, I had three friends kind of chosen to do that, some of whom were faculty colleagues too, and that was just really rich to be able to do that. And that has started conversations too about why have we adopted, why are we a multiracial family as well, has been really cool. Other things that one can do, real simple things like leave a book out on your desk. You know someone's going to come by. Maybe you haven't scheduled an appointment, but you know they're going to come by. You can kind of leave that book out there and not talk about it, just have the book out there. And just kind of see, for example, I've done that with the language of God very effectively before with a particular colleague. And so you can do things like that to have conversations. You can also talk with students in certain ways. So hospitality is a big theme for my family, for sure. My wife being a campus minister, she's very on board with hospitality and welcoming students. So So far, every student I've had, you know, if you're at a really big place, it'd be hard, but every student I've ever had has been invited to our home in that sort of manner. Not all at once, but you know, in groups of six or eight, which has been awesome, because one of the things that I do is I pray before the meal. You know, it's a pretty innocuous prayer, like, dear Lord, thank you for this food and for these friends, and we ask your blessing on this time of fellowship together. In your name, amen. That's pretty much the same prayer I do every time. That's been great. And we don't talk about chemistry or whatever at the dinner. We talk about whatever, getting to know about their lives. What is your dream? What would you like to be? Now, what is something weird you'd like to be? Like, if you had a hobby that you could do as a job, not just like what your major is, but like what do you think you'd... And so we kind of open up. It's a lot of fun to do that with students, as well as... We don't do it as systematically with my faculty colleagues, but I do it systematically with students. And I think that's been great. Another thing in this past year I've done with some of my colleagues, particularly my Muslim and Jewish colleagues, has been show great interest in the chaplaincies that we have established in Claremont for those positions. I've been on search committees and advocacy boards and so on for not just the Protestant chaplain, but the Catholic chaplain, the Jewish chaplain, the Muslim chaplain, brand new Muslim chaplain we have. And it's been great developing relationships with Jewish and Muslim colleagues on those committees and with students who are deeply committed to the Jewish faith, the Muslim faith. And then I am also the voice to the whole college for the chaplaincy in some sense. And so I'm announcing, hey, we've got a new Muslim chaplain, please come meet them, whatever. And they're like, whoa, Dave's a Christian, why would he care about the Muslim chaplain, right? So it's like, oh, I care about faith more deeply and broadly than just, you know, their picture of my narrow care, right? So I think those are ways, examples of ways that one can surprise and pique interest in colleagues.
Thanks, Dave. So my name is Jennifer Wiseman, and I have had a varied career in astronomy over the years in both academic and non-academic institutions. So I can speak a little bit about, from that perspective, of just being a scientist in a scientific community, but I also want to speak a little bit about perspectives I've gained from working with a dialogue program at a science society. The American Association for the Advancement of Science has an official dialogue program on science, ethics, and religion, where we're intentionally bringing religious communities and scientists together. So first, from the personal hat, and this has been said a million times before, I'm sure, but it's can't be overstated that just, first of all, developing a good trust and a personal relationship with your colleagues, and that takes time, is very valuable. So when they see that you're a person who is truly interested in the field and in excelling in the field, I don't mean being perfect in the field, but I just mean that you're genuinely interested in being a person of integrity in doing the work in that discipline, and that you are not self-centered, then they really notice that over time. You know, if you make an effort to be a friend, to, as a student, hang out with the other students. You know, if you're a young faculty member, reach out and check in on your fellow faculty members, ask them, you know, how they're doing. Really show some care, and then also show professional concern for your colleagues. If you're a professor, making sure that all the students in your group are feeling wanted and supported and are getting a chance to shine, to lead, you know, give lunch talks or whatever. Or if you're organizing a conference, making sure that you're inviting people to the podium or to give talks or to participate that might be overlooked. You know, there's all kinds of ways that, depending on the stage of your career, you can show that you are a person that cares about other people. And you care about the integrity of the research, but you also care about how it's being done. And that you are treating people as though they matter and they count, or you're lifting up maybe the student, maybe you're taking in the students, if you're a professor, who aren't the top notch. Maybe you're taking in the students who are struggling, and you go out of your way to invite them to work with you, and that kind of thing gets noticed. And all of those kinds of compassionate concern, after a while, people notice. They want to know more about you, and you get to know them, and then it can come up quite naturally what motivates you, and no, you don't have to be perfect example. I've heard some terrible advice over the years from well-meaning Christians that didn't fit well. Like one person said, and really meant it, but that your only fault. This is a wonderful goal, mind you, but this, and so this is a Christian in academia that I really look up to, but he said, your only fault should be that you're a fault, in quotes, your only quote-unquote fault in your colleagues' eyes should be your faith, your Christian faith. Everything else they see should be, you know, perfect so that it doesn't, you know, dampen.
That's a high pressure, though.
Yeah, but, high
exactly.
Bar. High bar.
You know, that is wonderful but terrible advice because, yeah. You know, I see so many ways that I, you know, I'm not as good as my colleagues at this, I failed at that, I'm struggling at this, I'm, you know, so perfection, I think, is not really, it might be a nice goal, but I think instead, what you know, you should basically try to do the best you can at being a good scientist in your field, but do it in a way that is respectful of your colleagues and compassionate, you know, looking out, taking the time to reach out to them. That goes at any level, whether you're a student or faculty member. Now, with my other hat, I have a different perspective of seeing how the secular scientific world views religious communities. And it's often not with necessarily disdain, although some do have that sense, but most of the time it's just mystery. They don't have a lot of chance to interact with religious faith communities other than what they read about in the media. Or they have some odd relative in their family who's, you know, very religious and very strange, and that, so that is their, you know, their perception. And but a lot of times, I know scientists and secular colleagues are not necessarily innately hostile toward religion or religious people. They just haven't had a chance to interact. And one of the things through our dialogue program that we provide, and we're trying to do more of, is provide opportunities for scientists to interact with religious communities, because a lot of times they don't know how to do that. And they're always relieved when we tell them that when we invite them to come into religious communities or into discussions with religious groups or leaders and ask them to just talk about their science. You know, we're not asking you to come in and talk about science and religion or science and your perspectives on religious faith. We're asking, people are interested in these religious groups to hear about your science. So one way to interact with secular colleagues is to show them that you're really interested in what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And even invite them into maybe a religious setting, a religious group meeting, a lunch talk, sometimes a congregation, to talk about their science and assure them that that's all you really want them to talk about, and, you know, unless they want to talk about more. And then, of course, people will be very interested. And a lot of times I've noticed that secular scientific communities is surprised at how interested religious people are in science and are also quite curious and honored to be invited in to come talk about the science. And then, of course, while they're there, they brush shoulders with people who have a broader range of compassion and interest and they experience a faith, a touching of the faith that they haven't before in that sense. So that's what I have to say.
So as Polanyi might say, I know more about this than I can tell. But I was debating about sharing about... Oh, my name is Dr. Joshua Samudas. I'm a professor at a leading science institution at Secular. Most of my colleagues are atheists. I have a medical degree and a PhD, and I run a research group. I've been in it for about 5 years. I don't have tenure. One of the more interesting things I found out, and I really do believe, is that that the academia, specifically in science, it's a very ripe field. There's people who are very curious about Jesus there. They just need someone to talk to. The problem is that there's not enough laborers. Pray that God would send more laborers to the field. And I think that's such a rare thought. And, you know, I was thinking about talking about how I open these conversations, some practical advice, maybe how I share the gospel. But actually, that's all secondary to this really fundamental thing that's often lacking. And that's a fundamental thing, I think, is hope. I think when we think about our colleagues and the people who are superiors and the people who are, like, you know, horizontal to us, most of us do not have hope that they are within the gospel's reach. Is that not true? it's really easy to think about the people who are below us and the influence we have with them, but I want to let you know that there's no one outside the gospel's reach. Do you agree with me? I want you to know that there's something very powerful in living in our faith. That God is active in our colleagues' lives. He's active in our superiors' lives. And we have an invitation now to enter into that and hope that he could use us as well.
That was lovely, all of you. But I'm sure that there are questions, so.
Well, if I could respond to what Josh just said, I think the word hope is key. And as one of my colleagues has often said as well, a key is what is the hope that we experience in the gospel, right? And then what hope do we imagine the gospel offers to our colleagues, right? It may look a little different than it may to us, right? But what is the hope that would make a difference in their lives? Is it justice? Do they want to see shalom? Do they want to see things set right? Do they see things are broken? Speak to that. Speak into that. Let Jesus speak into that. That's a direction to go. To speak what's interesting and impactful to us is good, but the more we know our colleagues and know them well and have kind of earned the right to speak in some sense, then let Jesus speak into that, into where you feel their longing really being, where they might be impacted.
What you just said is really, I just wonder, how do you approach situations in which you don't necessarily know if you've earned the respect of somebody and that you're not quite sure that you're the right person to say those things to them, that, you know, what do you have ready words, or do you just trust that you'll say the right thing and not alienate them further, which is also a possibility. And I think, all seen Christians, you know, blue in the face trying to.
So,
yeah.
So I would say that in church, often when it comes to talking about our faith, a value that highly emphasizes boldness. Boldness is great, I have no problem with it, but something is more important than boldness, and that's wisdom. So a key thing is wisdom, and then the other piece of it is understanding how this works in light of who Jesus is, and he gives us a great example. It's not just about throwing words at people, it's about actually embodying those words. It's about incarnation. So the problem is not that we don't have just the right combination of incantations to say at church when we bring them there. We just say it in the right angle, and then they'll get it. Well, the bigger issue is that we need people to go to them, to be one of them. And when you're one of them, you know their language. You know why you say trust instead of faith. You know why, you know what they respect, what they don't. You know why they don't find arguments against evolution convincing. You understand, you know, what are the questions and what are their concerns, and so it gives you a starting point to actually have wisdom when you talk about it. And in terms of the issues of, you're talking about maybe you're not the right person, I would just say usually if you have the wisdom, God likes to use people who are weak in the eyes of the world. He's the one who can use the graduate student to bring his advisor to faith. Or her advisor, right? He's the one who can do that. Do you guys believe that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. And because of that, and because honestly, I truly believe that Jesus is greater than anything I find in science. I mean, I love science. Don't get me wrong. I find myself in science. But I personally find Jesus greater than anything I find in science. It's such a privilege to tell them about him.
So, Josh, I have a question for you about fear versus hope. A lot of people who don't have tenure in public universities would probably be afraid to come out as a Christian in their context and wait till they have tenure before they speak the gospel into the lives of their superiors, especially. How do you assess that? How do you address people?
I don't have tenure.
Yeah, right, exactly. So probably people who don't have tenure, you're probably kind of unique in that sense, that you're not afraid you have the hope. So how do others who have that fear, how do they overcome that fear?
I will say I do have fear. I didn't say fear. I mean, fear is a good thing. It keeps you from doing stupid things. What I said is have hope, right? And I said to have wisdom. But yeah, so what I would say is that I think boldness is really the wrong focus in all this. So I was silent for many, many years as I was really understanding the culture. I think science is an odd culture, is it not? And every discipline is very different. And you really do need to take the time, especially as students in particular, to really understand what it is. It's different than what you learned when you were in high school, and probably very different than what you learned at church. And understand what it is. Also, there's a lot of there's a hard journey we're on, usually, of really thinking. For example, I'm in biology. So if you're in biology, there's a very hard, challenging work we have to do to figure out what we really think about our origins. Because while you can be undefined in that in the church, if you're going to be public as a Christian in biology, that will be a central thing. And it's better to work that out before you say stupid things in public. And I think as you do that, God will start to guide you and lead you. So one major point, which was very scary, but I felt God's distinct leading, was in 2012 when a politician said a stupid thing about the age of the earth. And I got in an argument with my wife about it. And then I wrote an article, because I'd just done Veritas Riff with Jennifer Weissman. And I remember looking at that and sending out to a group of mentors and saying, should I submit this to the Wall Street Journal? Because if I did submit it, everyone would know that I was a Christian. And I was just 1 year into being a professor. And actually, this is one of these cases where everyone who I asked advice from, every mentor said, do not do this till you get tenure. And I remember thinking, you know, tenure is not a guarantee. And I mean, this is kind of like a very private moment with God. Like, tenure is not a guarantee. And what happens if I spend 5 years in silence and then I don't get tenure and then I have to go do something else? If I look back on like the coming 4 years and I've been silent during that time, am I going to be at peace with this? And for myself, I just knew that that would be a horrible tragedy. I would not be able to live with that. And so I realized, you know, I'm gonna put this article in, which declares that I'm a Christian and I follow Jesus, and why and how the center of the Christian faith is not how old the earth is or how God created us. It's rather that Jesus died and rose from the dead. And I put it in and got into the Wall Street Journal, which that's not exactly easy to do, but you know, God's grace. So there I am now in the Wall Street Journal. It turns out the Wall Street Journal is the most read publication in the entire world. It's more read than Science. I know. It's more read than Nature. And it was interesting what happened. Okay, so I wrote that article. That was the message, that the core of the Christian faith is not how God creates the world, but it's how he chooses to save it through Jesus. Who here disagrees with that, by the way? No one, right? I was expecting, okay, wow, I've come out of the closet. I'm going to now get a lot of very hostile comments from all my atheist colleagues. And that's not what happened. In fact, it was shocking to me because I did get a lot of negative emails. It was all from Christians. It was really an eye-opener. Like, I was so fearful of my colleagues when that's not who had a problem with me. That's not who had a problem with me. It was an eye-opening thing. In fact, actually, over the years, I've just had time and time again colleagues come to me and thank me for being open about my faith. And even some of them hope that there'd be more people like me. And then time and time again, while many Christians have been very kind and accepting me, also many Christians, including my own family members, have been very angry. And I've had to really come to terms with that and realize, you know, what's going on here. And I don't entirely understand it yet, honestly. But One thing I will say is that there's just a definite misperception about what scientists are. They're not mini Dawkins. Even the atheists are not Dawkins, okay? I think usually what it is the religious communities, we're just, in Jesus in particular, they're just curious about him. They find him really compelling, but they can't figure out why Christians are so weird. and they just need someone to explain it to them.
So what did you say that made Christians angry?
I said that there's a lot of evidence for evolution. But it was funny. I said there's a lot of evidence for evolution, but I'm not a Christian because of how God created us. I'm a Christian because of how he chose to save us. And it's funny, it's the gospel. I put the gospel in the Wall Street Journal. My scientific colleagues heard it, and I talked about how Jesus rose from the dead. And yet, you know, you put those two statements, you know, there's evidence for evolution, Jesus rose from the dead. And what Christians took away from that is there's no evidence for evolution. How could you say that? And what my colleagues came away from it is, wow, you're going to take a lot of flack from that, but I'm curious, why do you believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Mm-hmm. And I guess so that was in 2012, and this has become one of the major reasons why I've chosen to be way more open in my faith, because people like me are a curiosity in this world. And though I bear a fair amount of abuse from Christian communities for what I do, it opens the door to talk about the core of our faith. So what is the core of our faith? What is the gospel? I think it gets confused with the gospel narrative starting from creation. And that's actually not the gospel. If you read in 1 Corinthians 15, it's very clear what the gospel is. It says in 1 Corinthians 15, it's really just an invitation to consider the reality that according to Scripture, Jesus died, was buried, that's physical evidence of a sort, and that he rose from the dead 3 days later, and that he was seen by many, and to which we could add, he's seen by us. It's an invitation that the God who cannot be found through science, the God that cannot be found through the human effort to study this world, makes himself known through the death and resurrection of his Son. He rose someone through the dead so we might know who he is. Come and see what he has to say. That's the gospel, and it's compelling in science to this day.
That's all our time.